The Giants podcast, isn't it?
This is not a Giants podcast. But,
I might turn it into
go
one.
Ahead, do what you got to do. I'll let it get it out of your system.
Oh, feels good. Feels good to cheer for at least one team that knows what they're doing and can take care of business.
Sean and Neil, ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
Big Giants fan. Been delighted all week.
Yeah, there are two teams that caused me to bleed red, white, and blue. One of them not having a great year, but the other one just captured a fourth title, so
you'll actually be in a good mood throughout this podcast.
The Habs cannot win another game for the rest of the season, and I couldn't care less.
There you go. I'm Zach Vanossa.
Care, but just, I mean, I've already given up on the season, and some of my other boys winning a Super Bowl.
I understand.
So. Oh yeah,
my boys didn't win a Super Bowl. Well, they did last year. They'll get two in 3 years.
That is entirely possible.
All right, let's get to the sport that we're supposed to talk about on this podcast. That'd be hockey. Montreal Canadiens, as you just said, and I don't disagree, this season is over, right?
Yes.
Exactly. So,
the fact that anyone, you know, that there's still those whispers out there that people are still doing the math just kind of makes me laugh at this point.
Are there really people out there doing the math and thinking
there are,
that there's some way that this team's getting in the playoffs?
Which, first of all, would not be a good thing for the long term.
No, not at all. I mean, look.
And secondly, is a mathematically, you know, there's maybe a 1% chance of that happening at this point.
Yeah, well, where we sit right now, look, we've suffered through the shitty season thus far. We might as well, you know, fail properly if we're going to fail.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they should tank the rest of the season, but
no, but
this notion that they can somehow leapfrog over six teams and make it into the playoffs is laughable. You know, the season, if the goal was to make the playoffs, that, you know, that dream is dead. And now it's, you see what you can do between now and the trade deadline. You make some moves, try and set yourself up for next year, and you know, you enjoy the little things between now and then, and hope that the team can start to lay a bit of a foundation.
And one of those things, one of those little things to enjoy. This podcast in the opening 20 right now. All right. Oh, hey, look at that. Theme song came back. It's not what we meant to do. All right, so hit us with number one.
Number one, should Thomas Plekanec be on the trade block?
Absolutely not. There's certain pieces I want the Canadians to keep, and I just simply do not believe you could get anything of worth value that would be worth getting rid of one of your homegrown assets and... a player who's maybe not having, no, certainly not having his best season, but is an absolute talent, and I wouldn't want to see him go anywhere else. No, Plekanec should not be on the trading block.
Yeah, that's the key phrase, is equal value, which I don't see happening either. Am I 100% in theory absolutely opposed to trading Thomas Plekanec? No, not if he's going to get you something really nice in return, or if not, if he's part of some package
for
an established superstar, but I just, like you, I don't see that happening.
What would you accept coming back for him?
You know, he's a top six forward, very good two-way player, but, you know, not an incredibly dynamic offensive player. If you could get a top six forward, a 35-goal caliber top six forward, maybe I'd think about it, but...
Yeah, okay, I
don't think he's completely and utterly untradeable, but I don't see there being a deal out there between now and February 27th that makes sense for anyone, really. I don't think he's on the move.
No, I there's no way that I could see a deal coming that I'd be happy with, that Plekanec would be involved in, simply because, as you say, it would take one of those, you know, top six forward of at least equal to, if not better value, since you always want to win a trade. And you're right, that's a goal scorer who can net you 30 to 35 every year and, you know, isn't a liability, because Plex just does so much for the Habs. People forget, you know, that... Even on the penalty kill, he's so valuable. He brings a lot that you don't necessarily see, so I just don't see a scenario where somebody's going to give us something that I'd be happy with coming back. You know, it, maybe if, you know, it was one of those scenarios where Anaheim was looking to make a one of their moves of their big three guys and they thought Plekanec in return, then I could see it. But other than that, there's just no way that I would be happy with what you'd expect back.
No, and there have been some rumors, but that's a move, if anything, and I don't think they should move him, but that's a move you make over the summer or at the draft. It's one of those franchise-changing moves. He's not a rental.
No, definitely
none of the none of the contenders out there are looking at Plekanec and his long-term salary and thinking this is a rental player that's going to push us over the edge. It's not a trade deadline type of deal.
Yeah, exactly. All right, who's the Hart Trophy front runner in your mind?
Well, we were sort of talking about this question when we were pre-gaming the show because Malkin was in town, obviously, last night, recording this on a Wednesday. I think Malkin, in most people's mind, is probably the front runner.
Yep.
If I had to lean in any direction, I'd probably go with Jonathan Toews, who I think is the best all-around player in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's having a heck of a season for Chicago. So Toews will get my vote. But it's going to be one of those years where I think someone's going to do something down the stretch run to sort of pull away from the crowd, kind of like Perry did last season.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that completely. I mean, I think right now if we voted today, Evgeny Malkin would win, though I'm not against what you said. I thought until the last 2 weeks, in fact, my vote certainly would have been with Toews. But, you know, the Hart Trophy, it's not exactly labeled the most valuable, but if we are talking about a guy who's bringing a ton of value to his team and they'd be in a very different boat without him, no doubt if Malkin wasn't doing what he's doing currently with the Penguins, then that team's not in a playoff position right now. So I give the edge to Malkin at this point, but like you, I suspect somebody else is going to show up and put up fantastic numbers at some point the rest of the way, and whoever that is will end up taking the Hart. It's not to say it won't be Malkin. I mean, if he continues at this pace, it could certainly be him, and it's not to say it won't be Toews either because, you know, half equal to or even a little bit stronger than his first half, and you got to give it the edge to Toews at that point as well.
Number three, should the Habs play Peter Budaj a little bit more often down the stretch, as has been suggested?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be opposed to, you know, this clearly isn't a season that we're going to be going anywhere. Price is a young goalie. He doesn't exactly need rest, but I don't think it hurt to get Budaj out there and get him a few more starts than he's got through the first half. There's no point, you know, you're not going to overexert Price, but there's no point overplaying him unnecessarily. And, you know, Budaj's a good goalie, and I don't see there being a huge problem with putting him out there. You know, if it was Ald or somebody who I trust a lot less, then no. But I think Budaj's a decent goalie. I'd start him more than we saw in the first bit.
Yeah, that's fair. If you want to give him three or four extra starts down the stretch, that's fine. Why not at this point?
Yeah,
I don't
exactly
see Price tiring out, you know. No. And I think he's one of those guys who's actually better when he's playing 72 games a year than he is when he's playing 62 games a year. But why would you risk the injury at this point? Give him a bit of a breather. He's probably going to be headed to the World Championships if anything. And yeah, why not give Budaj a couple of starts here or there? At this point in the season, you got nothing to lose. Give Price a bit of a breather. Give Budaj a bit of experience, and you know you're not losing anything.
And just in terms of thinking about throw the guy a bone, why not? Apparently, you know, he's a good teammate. Everybody likes him. He's kind of your ideal backup who doesn't mind working his role, but when you put him in, you know, there has been times he's been a legitimate starter in the NHL. So I think, you know, just out of kind of the team thing, throw the guy a bone, give him, as you say, three or four more starts the rest of the way. Why not? It keeps Price out of injury possibility a few more times. There's really no downside. You know, since he's considered, and we all agree, isn't as good a goalie as Price, maybe you lose a couple more. Maybe that helps out your draft pick a little bit. Not that we're thinking about that. All right. Number four, what should the Habs be looking for with that top five pick?
Yeah, well, like we said, if the season ends today, depending on which way the ping pong balls bounce, they're looking at maybe a top five pick. Obviously they're setting goals. I think the pipeline that they have coming up on the blue line is pretty damn solid.
Yeah.
What they need to look for is what they've been looking for 20 years, which is a first line forward, preferably with some size, but not necessarily. They just need that guy who's, you know, can legitimately pump in 35 to 40 goals every season. They haven't had that in forever, and when you have a top five pick in the draft, you should be able to get that player.
Yeah, I don't think size needs to be the thing you draft. You can buy size. You can't necessarily buy talent. And yeah, clearly a top six forward. And with a top five pick, I mean, you should be able to, you know, you don't need to worry about the back end at all. I think if they didn't mess it up, it'd be a good pick. But part of me thinks that falling to the bottom of the draft, or the top of the draft, I guess, rather, wouldn't help us at all, because I just feel like we'd manage to mess up that pick. Am I alone?
Well, we'll see. I'm assuming there's going to be new management in place by the time the draft. And yeah, and so I'm not going to throw this hypothetical new management under the bus before they've even begun, but...
I suppose that was a bit premature of me, eh?
Obviously, our track record in recent drafts isn't great, but we haven't had to pick this high in a long, long time, except for price, and even that was a bit of a different situation because of the lockout, so... You know, there is a silver lining to this disastrous season, and if you can get that franchise forward, which, like, again, you should be able to with the fifth pick, you know, like I said, that's a nice little consolation prize for a lost season.
All right, hit me with number five.
Would you be willing to see Hal Gill go to Boston? They're apparently the, you know, there's been talks at least, put it that way.
Yeah, I don't want to see Hal Gill go to Boston. I don't want to help Boston in any way, shape, or form as they try to win a cup. It wouldn't make my heart any happier to see Hal Gill lift the cup with the Bruins. And I don't think you should ever be helping out a team that is as mortal an enemy as Boston and Montreal are. So, no, I don't want to see Hal Gill in a Bruins uniform. I expect that we'll trade him, and I'm fine with helping out another organization, because let's face it, whatever we get back for Hal Gill isn't going to make much damn difference in the future of this franchise. You're not going to get a top draft pick. You're not really going to get anything. So no Boston Bruins. And even if, I mean, so say you trade him to Boston, you get a draft comeback, that's going to be one of the bottom of the first round. There's no value to that. No, don't want to see him in Boston.
I don't want to see him there. I do think the whole don't trade within your division thing gets overblown a little bit, but at the same time,
yeah,
you
but
don't want
to... Not within the division. These are the Bruins.
No, I know. I don't want to see it happen. The only exception I would make is if Hal Gill, you know, goes to Pierre Gauthier and says, look, I'm from Massachusetts. I've played for them before. I want to win another cup. I've got maybe two seasons left. If he asks for it, you know, he's been a good soldier, maybe.
Okay, maybe if he asks for it.
And if he asks, but, you know, even then, like you said, if I have to watch Hal Gill lift the cup over his head wearing that Bruins sweater, it's not going to be a happy day for me.
I'd much rather see him go back to Pittsburgh. I'd be okay with that.
I'd be okay with any other team besides Pittsburgh or Toronto. Boston and Toronto, frankly.
Yeah.
But even then, Toronto's not winning the Cup, so what do I care?
Yeah, no, I mean, well, he's not going to... I mean, I don't think Toronto would have any interest. Boston is one of the only teams that... Or one of the few teams, not only, because there's certainly some teams that will want to add Hal Gill. But, and what do you expect to get back for him? Like, is realistic to think a sixth pick? Is that probably right?
In normal circumstances, yeah, but... Teams go nuts at the trade deadline if they think they're a Hal Gill away from winning the cup. And
that's true.
You can. I think we might be surprised what we'll be able to get back for a guy like him.
You know why?
Especially Boston. I mean, if you put him and Chara together on the penalty kill, that's just incredible.
Yeah. All right, number six of the teams sitting 6th through 10th in the East. They are the Devils, Leafs, Sens, Caps, and Jets in that order. Which ones do you think will fall, and who do you think is going to rise?
Well, the one team that I definitely think is actually going to fall out of that picture is a team we didn't mention, which is the Florida Panthers.
Right.
I think the Caps win the Southeast, and I think there's only one team coming out of that division. So I think you pencil them in. I think the Devils are in. The Sens have not been great lately, but I think they're in. And I hate to say it, but I think the Leafs are going to get it done this year. So if you're asking me, I think by the end of the season, the Jets are on the outside looking in, and the Panthers are on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I agree, actually, with those. I keep thinking the Leafs are going to make that final slide, but when you really look at it, the biggest difference between where the Leafs sit right now and where they have in the past 7, 8, 9 seasons of futility is that the Montreal Canadiens have always generally been ahead of them. So there's a team that just got taken out of the equation. If Montreal was doing better, then we'd be looking at another season in which the Leafs don't make the playoffs. Unfortunately, the Montreal Canadiens are a last-place team. I think the Leafs are in. The Sens, I don't know. They haven't looked good at all lately. I'm with you. I think the Caps will make the climb, and I think the Devils will hang around as well. Jets and Panthers, probably going to slide out of there. I'd love to see the Jets make it, but I just don't think they're quite there as a playoff team yet. It'd be great if they could somehow overcome the Leafs, but I don't see it happening.
Neither do I. I don't think they have quite enough. I love Leafs fans celebrating like they're the 2004 Red Sox, though, as soon as they make the playoffs. Like,
oh, it's going to be nuts here
God,
in Toronto.
The streak is over. The drought is over. The glory days are back. Oh, great. You guys finally win a cup for the first time in 45 years? No, but made it into the top eight for the first time in 8 years. Oh, well. That's good, too, I guess.
I love it. We've always got that, eh? Friggin' Leafs. All right, hit me with the seventh.
Number seven, do you believe that Louis LeBlanc will have an important role on this team in the future?
I wrote this question, so I shouldn't be breaking apart the words, but I stuck important in there, and no, important in terms of being a Quebec player who I think plays a decent role on this team going forward, sure, important like that, but I don't think Louis LeBlanc is going to be a superstar or even a star. I think he's going to be a very serviceable forward. I think we'll be able to count on him in the 20 to 25 goals per season thing going forward. So he'll be a decent part of the team, but I don't think he'll be an integral or an important part of the team in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many things about LeBlanc. You know, I wonder how excited we'd be about him if his last name was Smith. And the other thing I really would...
Very true.
...would love to figure out, and it'd probably be relatively easy, it's just I want to know what the perception of the guy is from the other 29 teams in the league. Do they see him as a future all-star? Do they see him as a highly overrated? Do they see him as a cog? I'm like you. I think clearly the guy's got some ability.
Yeah, he's proven that.
And he's been better, you know, up to this point in his development than I thought he would be. When we drafted him, I looked at his stats, I looked at his scouting reports, I thought we reached.
Yeah.
You know, now I think he's looking like a pretty solid first-round pick, and I think if he turns into different style player, obviously, but if you can get, you know, Max Pacioretty-ish type numbers out of him, I think that's not inconceivable, and I think that's, you know, I think that's his ceiling, but I think that's, if you're a Habs fan, that's what you got to kind of be hoping for at this point.
Oh, no, I think...
Which is great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not tempering down expectations when I say that.
If we could get a French Quebec player who can be amongst the top two or three on the team in scoring, I think that, you know, Habs fans would be very, very happy with that. And that's, you know, exactly where Max Patch is right now. So, as I say, that's his ceiling, and if we get that. But I think, you know, even if he's just a top six guy in the 20 to 25 goal range, I won't be completely disappointed.
No, even if you get, you know, just think about it now. If you get hopefully more seasons, but if you even get sort of a Michael Ryder, Chris Higgins type stretch out of him, that's not the end of the world.
No, I agree. But and that's more what I expect, right? That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I think that's probably more reasonable.
Exactly. All right, number eight. Which Habs trade asset do you see bringing back the most value? We already talked about Gill, and we said, yeah, I'm not sure what you'd get back for him, although people are willing to overpay. But there are other guys being discussed. Who would you be willing to see moved, and what are we going to see come back for him?
One name that I haven't seen as much lately as I thought it would has been Andre Kostitsyn. But I couldn't understand. I don't see why we would keep him.
You have to sign him before the trade deadline if you don't move him, in my opinion.
Right.
Or at least be on the way to something.
Yeah, and you know, I don't hate AK as much as I used to. He's been, in his own strange way, kind of consistent.
He's grown on it. He's grown on me this season.
Yeah, he has with me as well, but you know, I think it's just time to cut the cord with him. And there are teams out there who are looking for a top, you know, six-ish forward, which he kind of is. And a 25, 30-goal caliber guy, you could get a nice... I think he can get a first-round pick for Andre Kostitsyn. I really do.
Well, I think that would be fair. You know, he was a first-round pick. He plays like the kind of player... Well, I mean, you know, not consistency, but his numbers are consistent if he's not night to night. So I see that being the case. Travis Moen, though, is the one who I believe will move and bring back the most for the Habs, or at least should if they work this properly. Travis Moen, as we even saw in his run with the Ducks, and he's had a good season so far, I think, by his standards. I think he could be very valuable to a team, maybe looking to add that third, fourth liner with some grit, with, you know, a little bit of scoring ability. It wouldn't surprise me if Chicago came knocking for Travis Moen, maybe even the Vancouver Canucks want Travis Moen. I think you can get something pretty decent. all things, maybe a second rounder is probably average, but I think you might even be able to get a good young player who's going to maybe eventually fill the Travis Moen role, even if he doesn't right now, and they need something right now. All right, you ready to move on to number 9?
I am.
All right, who's it, me or you asking?
I can't remember. I'll throw it out there.
Please do.
Number 9, if Andrei Markov were able to return to action this season, should he?
Absolutely not. Why? Why bother? I mean, this thing's already taken forever. In a season where we're not going anywhere, I see absolutely no point in risking injury. Why not make sure he's 150% and just start next season clean and forget it? This season, no. No need to play.
Here's an idea. Why not make sure he's 150% before you sign him to a $16 million contract?
That's not bad. That's not bad. That's called doing what they did with Josh Georges.
Part of me wants him to come back and blow his knee out again so he can finally retire and we can get that contract off the books.
I don't dislike that.
I'm not even...
I wish I wasn't agreeing, but I don't dislike that.
No, that's harsh, but I'm kind of how I feel right now. You're probably right. If you're running a team, you want to be sure. But at the same time, you want to... I don't know. Going into the offseason, I'd like to be able to know that this guy can maybe give you something. I think you kind of throw him out there and see if he can handle it for 15 games. Because there's a good chance he goes out and he plays 4 games and both of his knees explode again, in which case you can finally cut ties with him, I would think.
I like that. You changed my mind. I think if he can play, we bring him back.
I mean, what's the worst case scenario? You get
no, I hadn't heard it put that way. No, you're exactly right. Worst case scenario is he retires, essentially. And I guess I would rather see a month and a half, 2 months of him playing decent hockey so that going into next season we can get a little reassurance. All right. You've changed my mind there.
Yeah, excellent.
That's a first on this thing, isn't it?
It might be, yeah.
So, all right, number 10. What can Habs fans and management take from this bloody awful season?
Well, do you mean that in terms of lessons learned or reasons to still want to live between now and April?
you choose.
Let's go with the latter. It was weird watching, you know, I've come to the point really don't care in the sense that I've obviously given up on the season, yeah. And I had a kind of a weird zen-like experience watching the game last night.
I was right there with you now.
Yeah, and
because otherwise I would have blamed it on your Giants glow that you have going on.
But last night I was just like, you know what, this is a really good hockey game. I want us to win, obviously, but whether we get 2 points or not is irrelevant. And I'm just going to kind of sit back and enjoy the game instead of fretting over every single play. And
yep.
It was, obviously, I'd rather be in the opposite situation. I'd still rather be in ninth place clawing for every 2 points. But it was kind of fun to just watch a good hockey game. The team played well. It was a fun
team
visiting. And if anything, that's what I'm going to take out of these last 2 months of the season is just enjoy the hockey for what it is. We're going to lose more than we win, but there's going to be, you know, there's going to be those nights where Plekke looks like his old self. There's going to be those nights where Lars Eller scores 4 goals. There's still those little glimmers of hope, and I'm just going to try and enjoy those for what they're worth.
No, I think that's exactly it. And I was the same as you watching the game against the Pens, even though I didn't see it in its entirety. I thought, you know, whatever. I mean, if it's the Pens and who play good hockey and they manage to win and Carey Price look good, take that for what you can, I think, the rest of the way. Management, what can they learn from this? I think you have to realize going forward that you can't make the drastic, weird panic moves. That people still do look towards this franchise as a real flagship franchise in the NHL, no matter where they are in the standings. And you have to act with a little bit of respect and appreciation of being the winningest franchise in the history of the game, and really stick to the fact that there's a way things have always been done in Montreal. A certain class that the Canadians have always managed to bring to the game, and that needs to be remembered in all the moves they make. And with this season being as weird as it has, a lot of the kind of, I don't know, the the mocking that came from the rest of the league and the fact that we became the joke came from the fact not that the team was in last place. That could have happened in any situation. I think it largely would have been ignored. But just the actual shitstorm that came with everything from the coaching controversy, from the way they fired coaches, from trading players mid-game, which even though I didn't care about, I think you have to remember that this is a franchise that did things the right way for a long time. The standings matter to some degree, certainly, and how much respect you're able to get, but also what really matters is just how you carry yourself as a team. And I really don't want to see another season. Even if next season turns out to be bad, I'll enjoy it more still if the team isn't the laughing stock of the NHL multiple occasions and not just for where they sit in the standings.
Yeah, and I think their management's also learned or should have learned that, you know, this is a pretty fickle league in the sense that you can do things for the most part right for a long period of time, and one or two bad breaks or one or two bad moves can send you in the wrong direction in a hurry. And, you know, as much as I've bashed Pierre Gauthier, I don't think he should be back. But as much crap as I've given him this season, his track record heading into this season was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. But he didn't respond well to the pressure. He didn't respond well to the team underperforming. And he made a couple of really panicky moves that I think have set the franchise back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if anything, we learn that you need this sort of long-term vision. It can't just be, you know, action reaction, responding to every little tempest in a teacup that's bound to come along here in Montreal. You have to have this sort of long-term vision. So I think they've learned how fickle the league can be, how short that window for success can be. But, you know, that swings both ways. I think the upside that they can learn is that just as it's easy to go from being a perennial playoff team to the basement, it's not impossible to go from being a bad team back to what you once were. And I think that's still a possibility for this team. So I think if they want to flip that logic around, they can say that, yeah, we had a bad year, but just as it wasn't impossible for us to put ourselves in this situation, it's not impossible for us to get ourselves out of it either.
Speaking of some of those moves that you and I both agree have been probably damaging to the club going forward, and they were panic moves. The one that stands out the most, I think, is Thomas Cabrelet, though I've heard reasonable arguments to say that maybe Cabrelet isn't as bad as our perception of him is. Nonetheless, I'd rather not have Cabrelet on this team. Are you seeing any chance that there's a team on the cusp, a team looking for that difference maker to maybe get in the playoffs that desperately needs it, that might take Cabrelet off our hands at the trade deadline?
I think had he done anything for the Bruins last year, then yes, certainly. Because he frankly hasn't been that bad for Montreal.
No, he hasn't.
He's not the player he used to be, but he's still a pretty serviceable defenseman.
Yep.
And even with that contract, I think you could trade him, except for the fact that Boston did the same thing last year. And yeah, they won the Cup, but it sure as hell wasn't because of Thomas Cabrelet. So, you know, I don't know if that's a fluke. I don't know if he just can't bring it in the postseason, but I think his reputation around the league right now is someone who's not going to help you in April and May and June.
Yeah, I certainly.
That's the one thing holding him back, because just based on production, there are teams out there that could use him.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think Montreal fans get so convinced that they're maybe stuck with these guys. And like you say, Cabrelet has been better than I think perception is. But there's always GMs out there willing to try and, I mean, Carolina managed to trade Cabrelet, and this is something they certainly want to do. There's always going to be a GM, especially for teams, you know, looking, just thinking they just need one more piece to either get them into the playoffs or take them to that next level. I don't think it's impossible that Cabrelet could be moved. However, I don't think Pierre Gauthier is willing to admit that he made perhaps a mistake and make that trade, because then he has to do an about-face.
Unless this was the plan all along, unless he thought, I'll
that's
get
a
Cabrelet
lot of credit.
It
You're
is
giving PG a lot of credit.
It is, but it is possible that his rationale was, I'm never going to get, no one's going to break the bank for Jaroslav Spacek.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Cabrelet, at one point, not that long ago, was considered a, maybe not a lead, but he was considered an all-star caliber defenseman.
Certainly.
Maybe if he comes here and turns things around and just tears it up, I can flip him. And he hasn't torn things up, but he's been good. So I'm with you. There's a chance. And there's always one or two trades every deadline that just come out of nowhere, and everyone's just sort of perplexed. And maybe there's someone out there, you know, maybe some defenseman goes down between now and the trade deadline, and maybe there's someone out there who's willing to roll the dice on Caberle. Maybe.
All right, sticking with this trade deadline thing, because we are 2 weeks away, and the chips are going to fall one day soon. As we've seen now, GMs seem to not just panic on the day so much anymore. It's kind of becoming a larger window, and I think it kicks in within the next few days. If you're Pierre Gauthier, or no, you're you, and you're making these calls, you're the GM of the Canadiens, what are you trying to do at the deadline?
Well, the thing that's been astonishing to me, not even just with the Habs, is I would have thought the moving and shaking would have already started by now. But there are teams in the league that, you know, they're still saying, we don't really feel like we're quite out of it yet. We're just going to hold on and hold on.
Tampa Bay's
the perfect example. You know, Carolina goes and re-signs Gleason, who everyone thought would be a nice piece headed out of town.
I didn't understand that at all.
No. Buffalo hasn't pulled the trigger on anything, and even Montreal, as stupid as it sounds, I still think there's that feeling in the back of their head that, oh, you know, let's hold off a bit. Maybe we'll reel off four or five straight and get ourselves back in the mix. Which I think is a mistake. I mean, obviously they're making calls and stuff right now.
Oh, certainly. I mean, the rafters were apparently loaded with scouts the other night.
Right, right. And I think, I mean, not that they necessarily should have made a trade by now, but I understand that the season's over, and look, I get that you want to wait and, you know, sort of play your cards and sort of leverage your situation against other teams. But at the same time, there's something to be said about, you know, just pulling the trigger and starting to move those players out of there. And, you know, we've gone through the list before, but I think, you know, Gill's as good as gone. I think you put Campoli on the block. I think you put Caberle on the block, whether someone wants to take him or not. Is different from that. But you put him out there. And then, as we said, Moen, Kostitsyn. Beyond that, I think the rest of the players we have are either too young, too old, or too irrelevant. But, you know, you can get some, even if you ship five or six players out of town, I mean, that is a pretty big makeover. You can get some nice pieces in return.
Yeah, certainly. How many do you think? I don't see more than one or two of those guys moving, and I see them being Moen and Gill, to be honest.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Just because, I mean, it's hard to, even trade deadline, it's hard.
Oh, it is.
And shipping six guys out, you can't do it all for draft picks. We don't have six NHL ready guys, you know, in Hamilton. So I'm with you. There's six or seven guys we could ship out. There's probably no more than two or three. Even if you have a fire sale, it's hard to move much more than that.
Sounds good. All right. Speaking of breaks and deadlines, we're going to take a break. Little mini cut. We'll switch over, talk to Steph Darwish, get her a look at things, and then you and I come back. We got our douche to hand out. We got our three stars, and we'll take a look at the schedule ahead, which we're not even depressed about anymore.
No, we're not.
Good for us. All right, so once again, we're talking to Steph Darwish a day after a Habs win, which we haven't done too many times this season, have we?
I think it's our first time.
No, we talked after the Eller game against Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was another good...
Oh, my gosh, you're right. We did.
You know, there's been about four good moments in the season. That was one of them.
I know, it's true.
All right, so let's get into where we are right now. And where we are right now is the basement. In the past little bit, what are you thinking with this team? And there's a question Sean earlier. If you're Pierre Gauthier, what moves are you making, and what are you shaking at the deadline?
It's so hard, because the fan in me wants all these guys to stay.
Yeah, I know.
But if I was Pierre Gauthier, I'm so sad. But Hal Gill for sure, because any team wants him for the playoffs. If I was another GM, I'd be calling Pierre Gauthier every day about Hal Gill. So I'd see him being traded. And I think we could get, I know I've been criticized before by saying first round pick, but at least a first or second round pick, because it's playoffs and people pay a lot of money at trade deadline for things.
Yep. I don't think you get a first rounder, but I think...
No way. I think it's, yeah, maybe a first rounder is much, but a second rounder is a pretty good deal, I think. And then I guess our other free agents are, where are the free agents right now? There's another one. Oh, well, Darsh. Darsh, I don't think he can get much for Darsh, though.
I mean, well, what role is he going to play that, you know, at least 50%
already
of the guys in the AHL couldn't sort of play that role as well?
Yeah. So I don't think, I mean, I've heard Darsh's name around. To me, Hal Gill's like a huge bargaining chip that he has.
Yeah, the other one that we've been talking about on this podcast is Travis Moen. I think something could come back for him as well. Something of actual value, not just trade for trade's sake.
Yeah, I agree. I think some value there, too, because, again, he's pretty important to come playoff time, and this is, like, you're not signing them for 2-3 years, you know?
Exactly. Now, Sean and I were talking, we've settled into a zen-ish zone on the season. Where are you in terms of how you watch the games now? Is there anger, or have you moved past it?
You know what? That's such a good question. I've totally moved past it, and I'm happy for the wins. You know, like it's fun to see a win, but I know there's no playoffs this spring.
I'm good. I'm glad, because anybody out there who's still counting what needs to happen between now and the end of the season in order for the Habs to make the playoffs, I mean, that's a delusion at this point, a very big delusion. It's just not going to happen. It's not impossible, but it's next to impossible.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm all for the people who hold the faith, and I'm glad that they're able to, but you know,
exactly.
We all see
where
they are, and I don't want them to make the playoffs and go in at eighth place.
No, there's no point.
A miracle run doesn't happen all the time.
Well, as I said, we've suffered through the awful season at this point. If this is going to be our awful season, let's finish it at least. Let's finish not impressively and get that draft pick that people keep talking about we need to do year in, year out, rather than finishing the 8-7 spot as per usual.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to the draft pick, actually.
Yeah, when was the last time you looked forward, besides the Carey Price draft, which, you know, there was some hope that somehow the ball would fall in favor of Montreal getting Sidney Crosby, but when's the last time you're really looking forward to the Habs drafting somebody?
I think it was because when the draft was held in Montreal just a couple of years ago.
I suppose.
I wasn't holding my breath, but I had a tinge of excitement.
Well, and we got Louis LeBlanc from that draft, right? That was the Louis LeBlanc time.
There
you go.
And I went to the draft. There was free tickets, I think, they were giving to the draft, eh?
Yep.
Somehow I had tickets. It was very boring.
Somehow you always have tickets, Steph.
Afternoon for, like, I think he was picked, like, 17th?
About middleway, I don't remember exactly, but I know it was middle of the way.
It was low. I waited a long time.
Yep.
Anyway, so yeah, I've never actually, I guess, so then never. I've never felt real true excitement over who we're going to get.
So what would you want, we talked about this earlier, what would you want the Habs to draft with what could ostensibly be a top five pick?
I don't know any other names.
That's okay.
But there's a lot of highly ranked defense, and I don't think we should go there.
Okay.
We have some good defense, right?
Yeah.
Prospects?
Oh, yeah.
So there's also some really big centers.
So is size more important, or are you swaying towards talent?
I'm going for talented size.
You want it all.
You want it all, because there is this.
No, but which is the greater then in terms of what the Habs should be? Because, yeah, everyone agrees size up front, but do you see that as more important, or maybe size is a secondary factor and you just want to see somebody who can come in and play a top six forward role and score?
I do, okay, so, but I don't want them to be under 6 foot.
Okay, that seems fair. No dwarfs with talent. They don't have to be a giant, but they can also be a smurf.
Exactly.
I can't disagree with you on that one.
No, who can? No one would disagree on that.
Exactly.
Except for Pierre Gauthier. He'll probably draft a small defenseman.
What would make you happy from PG at the trade deadline?
His resignation.
I knew that was coming. Him to step away and leave it alone.
A smart move that isn't a desperate move.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that is, I don't want him trading one of our picks. None of our high picks should be going out the door.
Well, I can't see Montreal moving a high pick at this point. That would be, I mean, that'd be one of a few fireable offenses this team's undergone so far.
But doesn't he still say, like, we're still trying to make the playoffs? Or is that just public?
That's a public perception thing. That's a... I'm convinced, because you can't go out and say we're not, right? You can't say we're longer trying. So I'm convinced it's just public perception. I think teams like Tampa Bay, in all honesty, believe because they're within 8 points of the Panthers for the top spot in their division, they're not convinced they're out. But Carolina, Montreal, they have to know it's over at this point. There's no way. Yeah. Even the most delusional GM, that's only to save face and get people to go to the game, or at least, you know, because you can't tell your fans you quit, even when the vast majority of your fans know it's time to quit and perhaps advise that you should. There's just that business model that that's not something you can do. So I don't believe that Goatse thinks his team can make the playoffs. I don't believe Goatse thinks he's coming back.
Oh, you don't? I think he thinks he does.
You think? How could he think that? I mean,
he made moves up. Well, Camilleri was the last. That was his last move.
Yeah, there was still a chance.
A pretty big move to make for a guy who's not going to have a job next year.
Yeah, and that was a desperation move, and I think the team still had a shot at the playoffs at that point in time. At this point, without a miracle, you're not making it. I think a guy like Pierre Gautier, who I don't love, but I think he's a smart enough guy to know that the ship of any future with this team has sailed already.
I hope he knows.
I hope he knows, too. Maybe that's a wishful thought. Jeff Molson, there's a guy that we've all more or less let off the hook, but at some point, very, very soon, it's going to fall in his lap, isn't it?
Yes, because it is, at the end of the day, his team. He owns it. And if he can't put the right people in, like, I understand he's not a hockey player, so he's not going to go on the ice and score a goal, but you have to put in place the people who will find you the people to put the puck in the net.
Exactly.
In a roundabout way.
No, I mean, that's the business of sport. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah. So, I wish there was some way that I can, like, find Jeff Molson at a restaurant one day and just talk to him and be like, please, Jeff, tell me you're firing Pierre.
I'm sure you could start figuring out which restaurant he frequents. Oh, of course he does. You don't have afford a hockey team money and not eat out once in a while.
Exactly.
And I'm sure he hears about it in Montreal as well, though.
Yeah, I hope he does. But sometimes, you know, no one... Whenever you talk to a player or a GM or a coach, I was like, you know, they never hear it to their face, they say. No one ever tells me to my face. So maybe he doesn't know.
All right. Let's get to guys who I think some people would say something to his face. Scott Gomez, he's gone a whole year without a goal. At this point, we can't figure it out. But do you feel bad for Scott Gomez at all?
I do, because I truly do think he's a nice... I don't know him, but he does have such a winning personality.
I know, and everyone seems to like him. You know, I can't fathom a guy getting paid what he gets paid, having the lack of success he's had. Exactly, he must be so lovable.
That people can overlook... His teammates are okay. I read what you wrote in the form. It's so true. Like, if my colleague got paid 1,000 times more than I did and didn't do their job, I don't think I could be so nice to them.
Man, how nice does he have to be at that point?
He must be so amazing.
And not only would this person be making far more money than you, but your business would not be succeeding because for some reason only a certain amount of people can be paid a certain amount of money, thereby he's hurting the fact that you can hire other decent people to work at this company. How nice would this person have to be for you to not hate them?
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
He must be awesome.
It's really... I've learned a lesson from Scott Gomez that no matter what, your attitude means everything. He has a good attitude, I guess.
Well, the fans haven't exactly let him off the hook, though.
No. But there's people like me who, like, I'm like, oh, God, Scott Gomez... But I felt a lot more anger towards other players than I have towards Scott Gomez.
I know.
I used to get so mad about Kovalev.
Yeah, the Gomez thing feels like you're pissed at management for bringing him to the team and eating up all that cap space when we all knew he wasn't worth that or even anything close. But I never personally get all that mad at Scott Gomez.
Yeah, it's true. You're right, actually. Because he didn't... Maybe he did pay me $7 million, but it's not his
fault
that
did.
Someone offered him that.
No, exactly, and all of us would take it. And I know, as I said in that forum that we discuss Scott Gomez. I said, you know, I'm asking this question because I really want to see if anybody has a theory. And nobody got to any theory. There was a theory perhaps that he did get his contract and didn't try as hard. But as I said, I find that hard to believe because he wouldn't be that well liked if he was a guy who just took a contract and then decided he didn't need to try. So I can never understand. I guess his talent just went away.
But even as you said in your post, like, that much? Such a drastic drop-off?
I know, it seems impossible.
For a goal?
It seems impossible. And
like, Matt Darche scores goal. I would say Scott Gomez's talent level, at his worst, was higher than Matt Darche's at his best.
Oh, no question. And I think, you know, if we're drafting teams in the schoolyard, and I'm picking a player, I'm picking Scott Gomez, you know, all contracts aside, money aside, I'm taking Scott Gomez before I take Matthew Darche.
So how can he never have scored a goal? I don't even understand. It's an entire year. But he didn't play a full season this year.
Well, he's out for 6 weeks. So, I mean, you factor those out. Give him then another 6 weeks to score a goal. I'm not completely convinced he'll get one. He has to, but I'm not convinced.
No, I kind of don't want him to because I like the epic drama of it.
It is. I mean, in a season where things don't go right, we might as well have him go hysterically wrong, right?
Comically, like an entire season.
Yeah, you might as well.
I want it to be
82
games. When is it going to be 82 games? We'd have to calculate that.
Yeah, that's a decent stat to figure out when he goes 82 games without a goal.
Yeah,
then
a calendar year doesn't really work in hockey seasons, you know.
No, but it's still.
That's going to be my job tomorrow. I'm going to figure out 82 games
at $7.3 million. We shouldn't even care whether it's a calendar year or an 82-game schedule.
I know. Do you think maybe he just buys his friends and buys the team dinner all the time?
Is that what it is? Maybe that's what it is. He's like, hey, these guys are going to hate me because I make all this money and I don't do anything. But if I treat them every night with all this cash I get for doing nothing, they'll never dislike me.
Maybe.
That might be the Scott Gomez way.
Free dinner.
I would say that if he didn't look so likable on the ice. I was a Scott Gomez defender far beyond the logical point of Scott Gomez defending, and it was only because I think I want to be friends with the guy.
Me too.
I don't want him on my hockey team, though. My pickup league, sure, but the team I cheer for professionally, no thanks.
None, eh?
Oh, God.
Poor Scott Gomez.
All right, so we're looking ahead, how do you watch the games now? What's are you still watching everyone, or are you even creeped away from that?
I guess, okay, total honesty, no, I don't make it a, like, I had a dodgeball last night, for instance.
I didn't know you were a dodgeball player. Let's delve into this.
I just started. It's kind of, you know what, it's a weird, crazy world, this dodgeball league.
Oh, no question.
People take it very seriously.
Okay, let's get in. I'm not joking. I want to get into this for a second. I want to know about your dodgeball league. So how's it work? How do you end up on a dodgeball team?
Okay, well, what happened is my sister's been playing dodgeball. She went to University of Ottawa, and they had, I guess, a league in Ottawa. And
well, you
got to
do something in that
Montreal
city to entertain yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And they found a league, and my sister always brags that her team is the best team ever.
Okay.
And I was like, Chris, it's dodgeball. It's not hard to field a team. So I joined her league this year and fielded a team in order to beat my sister.
Yeah.
And we lost 27-1.
And you lost. Oh, my God. She's got a monster team. What has she done
over
there?
They're very good. They're very good.
How have they put this Goliath together?
It's like, it's so weird because you're five on a court and there's four balls.
Okay.
And it's really, you have to throw as a team. That's the thing. I didn't know there was strategy. When we played, we didn't realize there was strategy. So you have to, like.
Well, because the last time you played, you were 9 years old.
No, I haven't played since, like, ever. I don't think I've played since elementary school for sure.
Yeah.
And, like, now as adults, you have, like, strategy. So you have, like, a numbering system.
Okay. Go on.
And then you say, okay, we're going to get number three out, and you have to, like, collect the balls on your side and try and get number three out, and, like, one throws high, one throws low. So my team had none of that strategy.
Okay. Well, you're learning. It's a process.
We're learning.
All right, so what's the team name?
My God, we have the best team name ever, actually.
I'll
it's called
decide.
Lucille's Balls.
That's not bad.
It's pretty funny.
That's not bad.
Yeah, right. We like it.
I can go.
We have
with
a good T-shirt too. Good logo.
See, that's like a that's that's 50% of the battle in fielding a dodgeball team, right? It's good t-shirt, good logo, good team name, right?
Exactly, I agree with you. Yeah. And we win in that department.
And what's your record on the season since you got smoked by your sister's team?
We've only played 3 games.
Okay.
The first was an exhibition, so it didn't count.
What do you mean exhibition? It's dodgeball.
I know.
Will the season ticket holders get that one off?
But it doesn't matter. We lost them all anyways.
Okay.
But yesterday, we came very close.
But you're 0-2 in regular season.
Yeah, 0-2, but we're getting there. I think next game's ours.
Are you building?
Yeah, we're building.
Okay, good.
We lost by 1 point last night.
Oh, okay. So things are getting interesting.
Exactly.
All right.
See, and it's co-ed, and boys throw really hard.
Well, it's got to be. It's dodgeball, I assume. Isn't all dodgeball co-ed?
I haven't played sports with boys in a long time, and boys are strong. Boys are strong.
I don't know how to carry on that part of the conversation.
No, don't worry.
Thanks. All right, so we're going to, the Habs aren't going to make the playoffs. Everyone knows that. We've all accepted that. So what do you watch for now? Sean and I earlier were saying, you know, we're just happy with anything right now. We're just going to take the little victories here and there. What are you looking for?
Yeah, exactly. I watch very casually. I look forward to the entertainment of the game.
Yeah.
Like, I loved, that was a fun shootout last night. I was entertained.
Yeah, I missed it, but from all accounts, a lot of fun.
It was epic. It was good. I really liked it. And then I also like, I'm happy with the wins when they come. I don't get, like I used to when we're doing well, like a win is huge and a loss is devastating.
A loss will ruin a night.
Yeah, exactly. But now it's like, well,
yeah.
When do they play next?
Meh, of course they lost. They lose. That's what they do.
Exactly. They look like they tried hard.
Ugh. It's a sad season, eh?
Yeah, it's a sad season. Right. But I have so many more activities now.
There you go. Now so much more room for activities now.
Yeah, I've had a much more productive year.
There you go. You got your dodgeball team. You got Lucille's balls working for you.
Yeah.
Hard to argue.
I go to movies. I got into TV shows like Top Chef.
Now I don't know that things are so good for you.
Oh, Jersey Shore.
Oh my God, Steph, no.
I know.
Oh.
Edit that part out.
No way. I'm just putting it on a repeat. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go, but thanks for yet another chat.
Thank you, Zach.
And good job on. I enjoyed your the morning after that we posted on the Montreal Bias today.
Oh, why, thank you.
It was good stuff.
I enjoyed writing it.
I liked it was divided in two, and I like that you were happy about some things this season, even if they are Brian Burke. And for people, I want people to go read it, so go read The Morning After, the most recent post on the Montreal Bias behind this podcast. The second half, big thumbs up for that one as well. Enjoy it thoroughly. Go check it out, folks who are listening.
Thanks.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
See you. Sound good?
Ah, it does. All right. What's your poison?
It's a Carlsberg.
Interesting.
It's not normally in my wheelhouse, but it was brought over for the Super Bowl. A few left in the fridge. Why not? What are you doing?
Moosehead, also a post Super Bowl beer.
Post Super Bowl beer. I bet yours tastes sweeter than mine.
It does. I drank all my champagne since Sunday night. So.
Did you really have champagne?
I did. And cigars.
I had champagne as well, though I had it before the Super Bowl in the afternoon as we popped the bubbly in honor of 1 year without a goal for Scott Carlos Gomez. And that's just not a word of lie.
I missed the game, and I missed the near goal.
See, I had the bubbly ready to go at that point, too. I was ready to roll it out. You know, whether he scored or he didn't. If he didn't, it was coming post-game. But when I thought he had one, I was pretty excited about that, I got to admit.
Yeah, it was funny, people's reactions. Like, I
Because they booed. They booed Plekanec.
I kind of really didn't want him to score. I was like, I don't want him to get off of this. Let's just...
You want none?
There he is.
You want What's zero that? The rest of the way?
No, I just wanted him to hit that year so that, you know, we could have that reminder of how horrible a player he is.
Okay. No, I did too. I was concerned that he would score one before the 365 mark, but he didn't, so... All's well that ends well, or terribly, for $7.3 million. One thing that I forgot to do, I forgot to apologize for how long we've been since we last did the podcast.
Yeah, a bit of a dry spell between the All-Star break and then just a couple things here or there, so we didn't manage to get together.
But I was in Portugal. I was in Portugal, so, you know, big world traveler like me. Can't always follow the Habs. Yeah. And I was picking up the scores, and I didn't miss shit.
No, you really didn't.
I was.
I think that's the other thing. Then. We love doing this, but there's only so many times you can come on and say, "Well, team lost four, last five. They really suck. I have nothing else to say." You know, you run out of not that you run out of things to say, but
well, I mean. I think if you're new to listening to this podcast and for some reason you want to listen to them all and roll back through them, you'll see an interesting roller coaster of a season. And I think that you could probably document the 12 steps of grieving based on the tone of each of these podcasts.
Yeah, you really could. From the initial what the hell is happening to
our panic, the emergency podcast.
Yeah, that was... the highlight of the low light, and then just sort of gradual resignation to the fact that you know what, it ain't gonna happen this year.
Look where we are here on this one. We're just happy to be here, folks.
All right, very dudish. We're very, very zen like. Great feeling of calm washed over me when it's,
we abide. All right, let's take a look at the schedule going forward. As I said, we're recording this on a Wednesday. Is that all we are this week? Jesus. This one wants to drag on. So recording this on a Wednesday, you're likely hearing it on the Thursday before. The Habs take on the ferocious, the mighty, the always entertaining New York Islanders. What do you expect from this one? City of Champions. They're Long Island. what do you expect from...
as many subtle references to the Super Bowl as I can.
Nobody cares. What are you looking at for the Islanders? What are your big expectations for tomorrow night?
It's gonna be fun to watch John Tavares, who's having a really good year actually, and yeah.
That's it. That's the end of that one. Good job. Broke it down. Okay, we got, and here's what we got. We got the Leafs coming up on Saturday. These are the ones I'm still getting myself up for this season. Leafs, Bruins, the rivals. You know.
Yeah, those are
our own storyline. Exactly.
Not especially the Leafs, but. The thing, you know, we've been the better franchise for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. But
there's
a
Leafs fan who would disagree with that, you know.
I know. No matter how bad we were, we could never take those games lightly because they always brought their A game, and I think probably more often than not, they found a way to win.
Yeah.
And I would just love to be that to the Leafs this year, just be that spoiler team who they have to take seriously even though we suck just because they know we're going to bring the wood that one game out of every 15, you know.
And speaking of these little victories that we kind of come to in our zen-like approach to the season, would there be anything sweeter than on the last game of the season, the Leafs need to beat the Habs in order to get into the 8th, and the Habs stop them? I mean, that's the victory. That's our mini Stanley Cup this year, right?
It really is, and it's so sad how much I've been looking forward to that potential scenario that's still 25 games away on April 7th. And I'm thinking all I want this year is for them to be, you know, straddling that playoff line and we can knock them out on the last day of the season.
God, that'd be good. Be something.
It's so sad how much I want that to happen.
I know. And I mean, I'm not even proud of it. All right. And then, so that's Saturday night. I'm going to be watching it at Kilgore's in Toronto because that's the home of the Habs in this city. And then Monday, Carolina, Montreal.
There's a battle of the
day. A heavyweight battle. Mister Ooh, we'll finish last. And then Wednesday we got Boston coming into town. So another, we got a, in fact, over the past 6-7 seasons, I would say those three are three of Montreal's biggest rivals. Boston, interesting for its own reasons. As we said, Toronto, obviously, always interesting. But Carolina, jeez, I mean, other than seeing Kirk Muller behind the bench, there's nothing to look forward to in that one, is there?
I can't. I'm, as much as I'm trying to, you know, appreciate the games for what they are, I...
That's a Peter Budaj start.
Yeah, that's... that. You know, I might be flipping channels that night.
What is that night? That's Monday. They'll be
night tilt against the Hurricanes.
Boy, oh boy. Get excited, boys and girls. Get excited. All right. That's what we got coming up. Two good games, two duds, I guess, eh?
Yeah, more or less.
You want
to... And you know, the way we've been playing, we'll beat the two playoff teams and we'll lose to the two also-rans.
It sounds weird when you say Leafs and playoffs team.
It does. It
doesn't make sense to me. Let's get it into nos trois étoiles, brought to you by absolutely no one, as usual. Hit us with your third star, Sean.
Third star of the week, I'm taking a page from the Alex Disney playbook and awarding it. First of all, not awarding it to any players.
Okay.
Second of all,
you're going to award it to like 37
people? Two separate events.
Oh, two separate events. You've taken a page from the Alex Dezan playbook and sprinted with it 100 miles further.
I have. And so my two events that I'd like to give the third star to, one, Hockey Day in Canada.
Okay.
To the 2013 Winter Classic. I think the NHL's, and as much as we rag on NHL management, they do get some things right. They're starting to appreciate the you know, that hockey's never going to be a 365 day a year thing in the States, but mm-hmm. if you make these big events, people will pay attention. Hockey Day in Canada, obviously not a big thing in the States, but I just think that's a great...
Well, they're doing Hockey Day in America this year, same day.
They are, yeah. And so Hockey Day in Canada, Hockey Day in America, I like that. It's been a great thing they've had on CBC the past couple of years, and I love it. If you want to get a glimpse of why hockey means so much in this country, it's just a really nice day. And then the Winter Classic, I think it's been officially announced today.
Well, whether it has or not, I think it has as well, but it is going to be Detroit and Toronto.
Whether it's official or not, it's going to be Detroit and I think Toronto in the big house in Michigan, which you know, might get 115,000.
I'm not watching 24/7 Leafs.
Yeah, fair enough. But I've been to the big house. It's a pretty cool venue.
That's true. I forgot that you've been there.
Yeah, so I think that'll be great. I think that's going to look just absolutely incredible on TV. And as much as I hate the Leafs, you know, everyone in Canada has been harping now, when are you going to finally get a Canadian team in the Winter Classic? And I think it's nice to have that Canadian team in the Winter Classic now. So Leafs and Wings.
And Toronto's, you know, we're Montreal fans, but Toronto deserves to be in that thing.
They do. And that's going to look great. I mean, you get probably 60,000 people driving down from Ontario. You get 110,000 people, half the stands in red, half in blue. It's going to be, it's perfect. That's a great made-for-TV event.
And who isn't excited about Phil Kessel on 24/7?
Oh, my God. I might watch it just for that.
My God, he's going to be dropping his wisdom on us left and right. Let's see how fast we can get Vegas odds on how many times Phil Kessel actually speaks throughout that entire series.
I just want the over-under on words spoken by Phil Kessel.
It's like,
I'm going to take the under.
At 12. Just take the under. Oh, I'd love to see that. Now I kind of don't want them to... Well, I didn't really want them to fire Wilson. I don't really care what they do, to be honest. But I think... All these coaches have been likable in some way or another, and I'm interested to see if Ron Wilson can be likable on 24/7. Brian Burke will be great, but Wilson...
That's made for Brian Burke.
I'm pretty sure he did all he could to get that. All right, is it time for me to give my third star?
It is. Did you also give it to two separate...
No, I gave it to one person. One person who can be defined by three words. They are what, yeah, and okay. My third star goes to my favorite fan from the win against Pittsburgh. Rocking the Subban jersey at the Bell Center, Lil Jon is my third star. Nothing? No reaction?
Very fair. Oh, yeah, he should.
No reaction to my Lil Jon?
No, it's great. I love it.
Okay.
I'm all for it. You
were stunned by how good of a star choice it was?
A little bit. That's fantastic.
Oh, I know. Did you see him in this dance?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And then he got his picture with PK. And PK was rocking a very good-looking three-piece.
He's a dapper young fellow.
He's very dapper. Very dapper, our PK. All right, I'm going to go with my number two. Star. What's that?
Between Lil Jon and Aragorn, son of Arathorn, we've got some pretty sweet celebrity fans.
It's very true. And also, tremendously nerdy reference. The full title and everything. Congratulations.
You go more into the rest of you.
See, I picked Lil Jon. You picked two events. Jesus.
I did.
At least one of us
and
is
I
trying.
Name dropped Strider.
What? All right, my number two, Thomas Plekanec, who finally over the past little bit has looked like the Plekanec I know and love. Don't know what the difference is. He has insisted he's not injured and he was just having a bad season, which I give him points for owning up for if that's the case. But Plek has looked good, played, I'd say, perhaps his best three games of the season, the last three games Montreal's played. So he's my number two star.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. My number two, Alexi Imlin, who I think is really coming on. He's, you know, there's been ups and downs, which we probably should have expected out of a rookie. But on balance, he's been good. And I think he's a, you know, he's not a future, I don't even know if he's a future first line defenseman, but he's a really nice piece. If he's your third defenseman moving forward, that's not too shabby. And we'll see how the pairings work out next year, the year beyond that. But, you know, him and a guy like Georges together, that's a nice physical presence on the blue line.
Which the team would certainly benefit from at this point, I think. I mean, they feel so soft on that blue line. It'd be nice to, you know, take from the Emelin example, and as he goes forward as well, gets a little bit better, a little bit more comfortable with the NHL model. I'm with you. Good choice. I very much like your number two. And so drop your chief of the week.
Chief of the week.
Yeah, see what I did there? You didn't need to call attention. You should have just let it roll.
No, I love it.
Oh, I know, but I wanted to seem like it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Oh, it did. I was just delighted by it.
Okay.
The chief of the week, the first star, Max Pacioretty, who's on another one of his hot streaks. And, I mean, I don't really know what else to say except for, you know, it's gone a little, I think everyone who's been good this year, because there have been bright spots, anything that's been good has still sort of been overshadowed. And as bad as the team's been, you know, you would almost think that no one's having a good season, but that's clearly not the case. You know, Cole's gotten quite a bit of love because, you know, he's the new guy. Pacioretty's definitely gotten his fair share of love, but I do get the sense that he's, you know, maybe a little, you know, people don't realize quite how good he's been. He's been our best forward all season, I would say, either him or Cole. And I think he deserves all the credit in the world. And I think, you know, if this is who Max Pacioretty is going to be for us for the next 3, 5, 7 seasons, whatever it is, until we trade him, you know, I'm excited for the Max Pacioretty era. And he's streaky. I know how streaky he is. So there's going to be those frustrating stretches. But he's really, really impressed me this season. On the ice, off the ice. Even when he goes through those cold stretches, it still looks like he's skating hard and trying. And, you know, he's just not hitting the net all the time, but he's been really, really good.
Excellent. Excellent first choice. Couldn't agree more.
Thank you very much.
Other than I didn't make the same choice, but... No, you're completely right, though, in the fact that, especially in light of the way his last season ended...
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, I remember he was on Tony Marinaro's show, and Marinaro kind of said, I'm predicting a 25-25 season for you. He said, yeah, that seems like a good spot to aim for. He's on pace to be past that. And so, you know, a young guy like him, if he can, he looks like he could be in the 30-30 season and a 60-point season from him. So I'm with you. This has been he's somehow had a quiet, successful season. And you're right. It's probably because it's been overshadowed by all the despair. And my first star, as the very slogan of our website, themontrealbias.com, says, keep calm and carry on. Carey Price has looked very good through his last few starts, had some of his best saves of the season, shutout in there as well against the Jets. So Price is my first star this week, which I haven't said as much as I expected to this season. Not a knock on him. He just, you know, he the last few days he's looked like the Golden Price that we saw at his best moments.
Yes, that's very true.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
That's very true. All right, Sean, important question for you now.
Yes.
You think you could muster up the energy to drop a douche?
I think I got one in me. And this is more of a... This isn't as mean-spirited as some of my other douches, but I'm not angry at these people, but the people who...
These people? What does that mean?
As we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, the people who still hold out this sliver of hope that the Habs are going to make the playoffs, they just need to, you know, God bless you in your delusions of grandeur, but it ain't happening this year.
That's what we call a Leafs pipe dream.
Exactly. And there's a... You'll find that there's a great satisfaction with coming to grips with the fact that you're not going to make the playoffs. So
there really is. I couldn't underline it more.
I'm not mad at you, but stop doing the math. Stop going through the schedule looking for 2 points here and there. It ain't going to happen. I'm not happy about it, but it's fine. Maybe it happens next year. It's happened a lot more often than not lately. So just accept it. It ain't happening this year, and I'd rather stop hearing about the mathematical equations that could theoretically get us in.
Not mad anymore, eh? There's no more anger.
No more anger.
That's good. I like that. Hit me with the big question, sir.
Zachary Sivanos?
Oui, mon cher.
Drop a douche.
All right. There once was one player on the Boston Bruins I was a fan of. Let's not get overboard. That I could deal with. It was Tim Thomas. I didn't mind their goalie. His sweet mustache. Played an unorthodox style. But now, I have to give Tim Thomas my douche of the week. I got annoyed. He ticked me off, and I decided I didn't like him when he decided to not show up for an important team function at the White House as champions of the Stanley Cup, decided to put his personal politics in a move he called not about the team, even though that's completely what it comes down to. But I didn't douche him then. But now, after today, he's decided to, he feels bad. He feels the Catholic Church once again a victim of the masses, and for his Tea Party rhetoric, and I know we're not supposed to mix politics and sports. In fact, I've even asked people not to do it on this very podcast. But Tea Partiers, I can't stand. And so, just for that, Tim Thomas is my douche.
Yeah, like we said, we've been off for a little bit, so we haven't quite had time to get into that when it was the firestorm that it was. And, you know, I'm of two minds about it to a certain extent, but I'm with you. He did not come off well in this.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm completely for, you know, being allowed to speak your mind politically, and I think sometimes athletes act like politicians, which is a weird thing to say considering we're talking politics, but in the fact that, you know, they never want to step out of line, and that's fine. But I also, if I agree with an athlete's politics, then I'm always probably one of the first to applaud them when they stand up for what they believe in, even if it could get them ostracized a little bit. But this, and I'll be completely honest, this boils down to the fact that Tim Thomas is a Tea Partier, and I don't like those people, so I don't like Tim Thomas. Is what it comes down to. I'm not gonna beat around the bush. I mean, their politics don't agree with anything I agree with personally, so that's what it boils down to. And the fact that Tim Thomas has won makes me decide that I don't like him anymore either.
That's fair, and I mean quickly, and this isn't as much a discussion as it was 10 days ago, but. Does this have any effect on the Bruins, do you think?
No.
No.
Anybody who thinks it does is kidding themselves. It's because if Tim Thomas is suddenly being publicly this outspoken, it's never been a secret that he's a Tea Partier in the Boston Bruins locker room. They know that. This wasn't a shock to them. To the rest of us, it may have come as a bit of a surprise, but to the Bruins, no, they knew that. I'm sure he's been saying stupid shit in that locker room for a while now, and they laugh it off as Tim Thomas in his crazy ways.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I think people have sort of come to that realization. But that was the big discussion as soon as it happened.
Yep.
You know, is this is this going to, you know, cause the team to spiral out of control, which I think obviously is not the case, even if they haven't been playing great lately.
I love when somebody does something like this and then uses the sentence, it's not about politics, as he did to explain it. Like, really? Is this a hunger strike? All right, that'll wrap it up. We're going to be back a little bit sooner than we were between our previous break next time we do the podcast.
Yeah, we apologize for the delay, but thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for downloading, and make sure you subscribe, leave comments, all that jazz. It's been fun.
You working anything up for the page?
I am, and that's the other thing. I've been slacking a little bit on the...
Well, we all needed a little time out from this season.
Yeah, and you know, the All-Star break was a nice sort of cool off period, and now that the NFL playoffs are over, I'll be returning my energies to Puck.
Sounds good. Thanks, buddy.
Anytime.
And thanks to Steph Darwish for joining us as well. Thank you for downloading very much. This has been the 2-4 on the OntrealBias.com, and we'll see you whenever we do this next.